he was baseball mad. Had the fever and had it bad. Just to root for the hometown crew, every Sioux, Katy Blue. On a Saturday, her young beau called to see if she'd like to go to see a show. But Miss Kate said, no, I'll tell you what you can do. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
It is the second on-location edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, and both times I've had to see your ugly face.
Yeah, well, this goes both ways, guy. Come on.
Hi, Anthony.
Oh, hello, Tyler.
Where are we right now?
We are right from the D-backs offices at Salt River Fields at Talking Stick.
We're hunkered down like we're trying to ride out a superstorm.
In rainy Scottsdale, Arizona.
It's what is actually, this all about?
Yeah, I would not pay for this. No, I would not pay for this at all. Yesterday was 90-some degrees. Today it's like 75, and it's been raining for the last like 3 hours.
I was really super pumped to not deal with the elements, and then now it's raining. Not pleased. Unpleased. Like, nonplussed.
Like boron?
Yeah.
I hate dealing with boron.
Tanzanarium?
Think of one other element.
I just made that up. Oxygen?
Oh my god.
Iron.
You're such the worst person in the world.
Hey, good to see you, buddy.
Hey there.
So it's our first PDP together since the illustrious Los Angeles episode.
Yes. At my palatial estate.
Back in the day at your palatial estate. But yeah, now we're actually at a baseball facility. And we're going to watch some Colorado Rockies baseball today, something that you have already done today. Tell us about the day game today on Wednesday, March 18th, 2015.
Yes. Well, first of all, it's episode number 36. We've got to figure out what episode it is. We don't have a lot to choose from here.
No.
36 in Rockies history has been Christian Bergman, Tommy Field, Gabe White, Bobby Jones, but not that Bobby Jones.
Bobby J. Jones,
Mike Farmer, and Mike Munoz, who had a great mustache, if I remember correctly. So this one, since Bobby Jones has worn number 36 the longest, 97 to 99,
it's kind of sad.
He gets...
he's our default winner based on longevity.
He gets the honor of being PDP episode 36, the Bobby Jones edition.
Welcome, Bobby J. Jones, the Bobby J. Jones edition of the PDP episode number 36. Yeah, I guess I should have like introduced the show. Welcome in, it's a Purple Dinosaur podcast, live from Salt River Fields at Talking Stick. I'm Tyler Mon. He's Anthony Masterson. Welcome to the Bobby J. Jones Memorial Edition of the show.
I want to throw this out. Gabe White was the other option we had. He wore it from 2000 to 2001. In 2000, Gabe White won 11 games as a reliever. He went 11-2.
Pitcher wins.
He went 11-2 with a 2.17 ERA. That's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Next year with the Rockies, 1-7, 6.25.
Rockies baseball. Catch the fever. Man, yeah, Gabe White. I remember like that was back before I really, you know, got it all with baseball, and I was like, this guy, look at him, 11 wins as a reliever. I mean, it was a good season, but then he was Gabe White the next year.
Yeah.
This place is amazing, man. This is my first trip here.
I can't believe it was your first trip.
Yeah.
I've come here every year for the last 3 years, and I will come every year going forward
awesome.
As much as I can.
I definitely want to make this an annual thing. I just need to know the week that you're going to come so I can plan to not be here.
That's
that
fine.
Week.
That's fine. You could have gone today and been here while I was here because I was dead to the world completely.
How are you feeling today?
I'm better now. I had a cup of coffee. I got some brisket nachos in me earlier, but it was a late, late night with the baseball prospectus guys like Craig Goldstein.
It was good for me to finally meet yeah. Craig Goldstein. We talked a little bit of sandwiches in person.
Yeah.
Not quite as much as I would have liked, but I assume at some point this week I'm going to see him again and we'll dive into sandwiches some more. But it was good to finally meet Craig Goldstein.
The B-Pro guys don't mess around.
Yeah,
man.
No, I could tell.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that I loved about that. I realized that I recognized almost all of them from their Twitter photos.
Yes.
Which really creeped me out. Maybe like a stalker.
Even Craig's, which is just Calvin and Hobbs.
Craig, you look so much like your Twitter photo, man. But this place is amazing.
Yeah.
I was here this morning and did some minor league stuff. You were here and caught the day game, the afternoon game today. Got to catch a little bit of David Dahl. Tell us about the day game today.
Well, the overall result wasn't good, but who really cares about results in spring training in terms of wins and losses? was. The game wasn't bad. It was a Tyler Matzek versus Tyson Ross matchup. So pretty good pitching matchup. Matzek did all right. Struggled a little bit in the second inning. Ended up giving up a run in three innings, I believe. Struck out three, walked one. Was able to come back. It was hitting 94, 95 on the gun. So that's always a good sign. And they really the regulars that were in the lineup were Charlie Blackman, Drew Stubbs, and Nolan Arenado. Arenado had a couple of nice hits. Drew Stubbs had a couple of bomb or one bomb and then another ripped down the line. So that was good to see from Drew Stubbs. Charlie Blackman took two walks, which is great. And then by the time they took out the starting lineup, Rockies were leading 3-2 and then went on to lose like a 10-3 or something. So
get ready. Yes. They're starting it early.
Yes, Scott Oberg had a tough relief outing.
You said he looked good.
He did look good. His stuff is 94-95, had a lot of zip on it, good movement. I was actually sitting right behind home plate. I was able to sneak down there. Don't yell at me, Rockies. It wasn't me.
Sorry.
I swear I didn't just sneak down there with a berm ticket and sit behind home plate. But no, I was sitting right behind home plate, good movement on his fastball, had a really, really nice curveball. He was just up in the zone all day, and I think Cody Decker hit a grand slam off him. He didn't get much help from his defense either. They kicked around a couple of balls in the infield, but it's still
spring training.
It's tough to build on for Scott Oberg, for sure.
The Rockies will take on the Diamondbacks tonight in an all-Salt River Fields matchup. This is a weird day because the Rockies are hosting a split squad doubleheader. We talked about that yesterday.
Yeah, very, very odd for spring training. And it was nice, actually, when I was here after the first game and kind of trying to get tickets for tonight's game, they had a big buffet set up for all the workers here so they could get like nice free food.
Wait a minute. So this is like a baseball organization that treats its employees well?
Something like that, yeah.
I don't think you and I have ever worked for one of those at the team.
No.
That's strange.
Yeah. But also this afternoon's game, it was very, very nice to see David Dahl and Ryan McMahon in the game. They played about four innings each, I think. Dahl came up one at bat, ripped a first pitch single, and once I figure out how to put video from my phone onto the Twitter account, we'll be able to see that. So
you can record
really cool.
Through the Twitter app now.
Really?
You can record video.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Now you know.
Now I know.
The rest
the more
of the story.
I know.
Ryan McMahon had a good at bat against Nick Vincent, a former Long Beach State product. He was in the big leagues the last couple of years. He worked a count 3-1, took a borderline pitch. They call it a strike, and then eventually struck out. So good to see, though, those guys getting some real world action. Dahl had a couple of plays in center that he was able to make. He had one on a throw trying to gun out a runner at home. The wind had really kicked up at that point. He had a frozen rope trying to get the guy at home, but it went up the line a little bit, so I wasn't able to throw him out. But still, the arm was legit. You can see from David Dahl in center field, and man, he looks good. He looks real good.
I asked Walt Weiss about him earlier today, went in and just bounce that question off him. You're going to get another look at David Dahl. What have you seen from him so far? Obviously, it's not a lot. And he said, well, you know, I mean, I've only seen a couple of at-bats from him, but it doesn't take long to fall in love with that swing. And it seems like he right now is a guy. I mean, he is a guy that they look at in this organization as really taking that step to be a frontline premier prospect. And I talked with Zach Wilson, the Rockies player development director today, who said over the last couple of years, he's turned into a professional. And that, I mean, I think, you know, we saw from him with the 2013 that was so weird. And then last year he goes out and blows up. But I mean, you can kind of tell watching him that he has it, you know. I mean, he's got those tools.
It's got that it factor,
right,
or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
It's a dumb thing to really put on a player, but sometimes you can't really quantify it at all. You look at it and say, that guy, he's going to be a ball player.
Right.
Like, he was meant to do this. He's going to be good at it. And he kind of carries himself like that, the same way that Tulo does.
Right.
You know, Tulo's a quiet leader, the same way that David Dahl reportedly is. We've heard in Asheville, he's been a very good presence in the clubhouse there. He'll be in Modesto and New Britain this year. So it's to get him this chance, this opportunity in spring training to play with the big boys and to get at-bats against big league pitching like he did today against Brandon Maurer, I believe, was one of his at-bats. And seeing that he can stick it here, I think that goes a long, long way for a player's development.
This is kind of the time of spring where you really start getting down to it, because over the next week or so, the Rockies will make another series of roster cuts, and you'll see some of these guys head back to minor league camp. But just especially for the younger guys like Dahl, the moments that you're going to face big league quality arms are going to be fewer and further between. So it's good to see him at least getting some action. You kind of hope that he'll, you know, be up here a little bit more over the next next couple of weeks or so and get those at-bats in. But these are, as spring training games go, these are the good ones. This is like the meat and potatoes of the spring training schedule.
Yeah, and it's very good to see all the guys that are here that are going to be optioned in a couple of days, as you mentioned. You know, I think even a guy like Raimel Tapia is on the roster for tonight. We'll probably see him in the night game, even though it's mostly an A game for the Rockies with John Gray starting with a pretty much an opening day lineup, minus a couple of players who played earlier today. So getting those guys, just being around the clubhouse, even if you're not playing and contributing that much, or you're playing against, you know, guys who are going to be in Double A in a couple of weeks too, just being in the Major League clubhouse with guys like Tulo and Cargo and guys who have been there and been All-Stars and been Gold Glovers, it's just being around those guys and getting to see how they carry themselves in a big league locker room and see everything, you know, almost ancillary to between the lines, right. Like everything that's not the baseball game itself, and how you can become a major leaguer, how these guys got there, their work ethics and everything like that. I think it's awesome to see, and I hope they're taking advantage of it. I'm sure they are.
Man, one thing that you and I have talked about a lot is, you know, since Jeff Breidich took over, so many people thought it was just a move of more of the same, but it really feels like there's a different energy with this team this year. I mean, they rattled off, you know, 9 straight non-losses, wins or ties, which doesn't matter in spring training, but you like to see that a team is going out there and at least throwing good games together, but it just feels like there's something different about this team, this clubhouse, the way the guys go out, the energy that they're playing with. It feels like this is a more tightly put together organization right now than I think it probably has for the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, spring training is all about individual performances, hopefully putting themselves together to create a great team performance. And if you know, who cares if you win or lose a spring training game? But at the same time, if all the players that you want to see playing are playing well against major league competition or against, you know, whatever, it's always great to see that and carry that into opening day, obviously. But I think you're absolutely right. There's a little bit of a difference in this year than there was the last few years. And you were in the locker room, you know, this morning. You can kind of see for yourself a little bit. I haven't had that kind of access, but you see that. You know, the players realize the opportunity that's laid out in front of them, that they have a front office boss, a guy who is a key cog in getting them drafted or getting them signed to the Rockies, and Jeff Breidich, who is a director of player development and scouting. So, you know, they know that they have somebody who has their back in the front office right now, and I'm not sure that has been the case in the last 15 years.
That's a really good way to put it, because I think they realize that there's a guy there who has that level of familiarity with them that maybe, you know, if they go outside the organization, they hired somebody else. It's kind of like, you know, when you go out and hire a new football coach, he's got to bring in his guys, got to bring in his staff. It's kind of how it is in a major league front office. You bring in a GM from outside the organization. He doesn't necessarily know the depth that you have in your system. And I think that's where these guys will benefit, is you've got a guy in Jeff Breidich who knows all these guys, and is going to be able to make those decisions. Tonight, we're going to get a chance to see John Gray, which is really, really exciting. What's the thing you want to see most out of John Gray? I mean, obviously, like, I want to see him hit 119 on the gun. Probably not going to happen. But, you know, he's had such a good start to this spring that I think now you start looking at, what are those final steps? What are the final enhancements that he needs to make? Because he's going to be in Denver this year. So what do you, when you want to see a start like this tonight, what are you most excited to see about with him?
Of course you want to see the slider. And I've got tickets 4 rows back, right in section 109.
They're called slider tickets.
I'm very, very excited. Yes. And it's going to be coming right at my face. And I'm very excited about that. But
you're excited for John Gray to come right at your face.
Phrasing. Yeah.
But, I hope Lou's not listening.
Yeah. No, sorry, Lou.
Lou's never listening again. Lou's just done after that one time.
Sorry, Lou. But, you know, what I want to see from John Gray, of course, besides some awesome strikeouts, I want to see him go 5 innings, and I want to see him do it on whatever pitch count he's at. I'm not sure what his pitch count's going to be, whether it's 60 or 70, whatever. If he can get through 5 innings, that means he's able to, yes, command his stuff, harness his stuff, and also pitching well, and at the same time keeping his pitch count down while still generating strikeouts. That's obviously the ideal. So if he can get through 4 or 5 innings against, I'm not sure the lineup, we haven't seen a posted lineup for the D-backs yet, so we're not sure if it's going to be more their opening day lineup or not, but if he can go through guys like Paul Goldschmidt and Aaron Hill, and even like, you know, some guys like Josemani Tomas.
Former Rockies GM Bob Gebhardt just walked by the way.
Should we get him on the podcast?
Hi, Bob. Hey, do you wanna come talk about that 95 team? Remember Curtis Laskanik, Bob?
That was great.
It was a fun team. We could do those creepy interviews from SNL with Michael Jordan. Did you like that? Did you like that? So stupid question.
Remember when you were in the Beatles? That was awesome.
But this is going to be fun to watch John Gray under the lights. I mean, it's second big league camp for him, second
Wednesday
big league camp for
lights.
Eddie Butler. Wednesday night lights at Salt River Fields. I agree. I think you want to see him start to take that step where he lengthens himself in a game. He can get a little bit deeper on the pitch count and go a little bit further into what you hope to see from him come April, whenever, when he gets his first start, more than likely in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
This is fun because last year, remember when we started this podcast and it felt so far away? Like, it was like, well, you know, Graham Butler, like, they could be up this year, but it's probably going to be 2015. Now it's here. Like, now we're probably going to see them by May or June. June probably at the latest for those two, especially if they start well. So now it really starts feeling like, man, this is going to come soon.
Yeah. And then
Graymas.
Phrasing. Well, and now we're looking ahead to the arrivals of both Dahl and Tapia.
Right.
Which is going to be, the next thing to look forward to probably next year, if not a little bit later. But yeah, and you worry about a guy who throws as hard as John Gray does because, you know, a lot of times they want to go out there and throw it as hard as they can, see the radar gun readings, and that's why they can drive up their pitch count pretty easily when they do that. So I think it's going to be good if we can see him get deeper into the game and, you know, see the lineup twice. You know, so see maybe a couple of guys three times in one game, and big league hitters, and see what adjustments they make to him, and then in turn what adjustments he starts to make as well.
For a guy, Anthony Masterson, who has been here now for three straight years. Let's give the folks a little primer about if you come down to Salt River Fields a talking stick, let's say next week or next year, whenever it is, what is the Anthony Masterson plan of attack? Also note, this is a selfish thing because I basically just want you to tell me what to get for dinner tonight because I'm starving.
Well, today it was take a giant liter of water and sip it for 8.5
today,
innings.
It's going to be Anthony's hangover cures. That'll be the rest of the podcast today.
Yeah. If you want to get looking at food, you got a lot of options here. You got your Sonoran Dogs up by the front gate. You've got your barbecue place with the brisket nachos like I had earlier with like nice sliders and stuff. You've got a nice burger joint right across the way from there as well. Then you got your bratwurst, your typical ballpark fare. Then you have a new thing this year. It's like a noodle stand.
Ooh,
it's
interesting.
Like teriyaki chicken and noodles.
I saw, yeah. I went over to Glendale today, Camelback Ranch, and caught Dodgers Cubs, and they too, there were people walking around with like little to-go boxes with some noodles in them.
Yeah, and so that's the food situation. That's always good. And then when you come to the ballpark, there's really no bad place to sit. And you can
that's how it seems.
And you can grab just a $9 berm ticket like I did today and just go out there and chill and watch the game. But even today, like when I splurged for like the major ticket, like right behind home plate, and it was $28. It's not like it's going to be anything crazy. It's not going to break the bank at all. And really, I would say the best vantage points, anything, honestly. The sight lines here are wonderful. Even when you're sitting out in dead center field, it feels like you're right on top of the action. And just the whole layout of the ballpark is gorgeous because it's set against the mountains back behind here at Salt River Field, the talking stick. And it looks like it's almost built into the whole area. And so it's just a phenomenal place. There's no real thing I can tell you that you're going to hate when you come here. Just come in here, make a plan to do it every single year. Come while there's still time left in spring training, 2 weeks left or whatever now. So get down here, get to a game, because it is one of the most beautiful spring training ballparks you're ever going to find.
This place is amazing. And, I mean, the backfields are amazing. The grass is like a shade of green that you've never seen in your life. The facilities for the Diamondbacks and the Rockies, the Diamondbacks offices are down the left field line, the Rockies are down the right field line. Everything's separate. Like, they don't see each other. They're like roommates who never see each other.
Yeah.
You pay rent at the same place, but like your side is awesome, their side's awesome, and you never have to deal with each other. It's amazing, this place.
Yeah, the one thing I would say that probably could improve upon is the hat selection in the team stores.
Oh, no.
It is, it's not wonderful.
Do they have Salt River Rafters hats?
They do not.
That's the one thing I was hoping for.
I really think it should all be in every single team store. You should be able to have all of your minor league affiliate hats.
Go get Dave Stewart. Tell him to come on the podcast.
Oh, is that Dave Stewart?
He just walked by.
Oh, my God. Did he stare at you?
Can you come on our podcast, please? Dave. Dave.
He's going to hear you.
Just cream. What if we just ambush him? Sir, we're recording a podcast about the Rockies. Would you like to come on talk about your team?
Dave Stewart, do you need a catcher still, or are you pleased with Tuffy Gosiewicz?
Tuffy Gosiewicz was a Miners moniker madness guy, wasn't he?
How could it not be with a name like Tuffy Gosiewicz?
Tuffy
Gosiewicz.
Tuffy. Interesting Diamondbacks note from this week. Diamondbacks prospect Peter O'Brien reportedly, possibly, battling a case of the yips.
Yes.
Which is kind of scary, where he's just basically, he's gotten all Rube Baker from Major League and forgotten how to throw the ball back to the mound. He threw errantly something like 6 or 7 times in a game on Sunday. The Diamondbacks don't seem too concerned about it. Mike Bell today, Diamondbacks player development director, told me we think it's something that he's going to iron out. He kind of played all over the field last year, so it could just be an arm angle thing, but that's kind of worrisome. The Diamondbacks are interesting because they have a lot of talent in the minor leagues, but they haven't graduated a ton of talent.
They're interesting, but not encouraging.
Yeah.
So
it'll
guys,
be interesting.
Take a drink.
Take a drink. Only for the interesting comment, though, not the encouraging one.
Yeah, and we can probably throw this out here right now that you know, we laughed and giggled and threw a fit when Josh Colemanter was named opening day starter for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
And now I'm not sure if we have...
Tell us the news today,
I'm
Anthony.
Not sure if we have too much of a leg to stand on. As reported by our good pal Thomas Harding, the Rockies will tab one Kyle Kendrick for the opening day start. If that
doesn't... Yeah! And fired up. All right,
if that doesn't
Kendrick.
Inspire confidence or inspire Vietnam flashbacks of Jeremy Guthrie in 2012 or Kip Wells in 2008, I'm not sure what does.
Sweet. Sweet.
Yeah, so Kyle Kendrick signed in the offseason, and he will now become the opening day starter, which opening day starter really means
nothing.
It means nothing at all.
You really want to line up a good home opening day starter. That's really all you care about, and that's what they're doing.
Yeah, and they did that. They even announced today that the home opener will be started by Jorge De La Rosa. De La Rosa, one of the best pitchers at Coors Field in Rockies history. Now, the second best ERA of any pitcher at Coors Field of all time, at least 30 starts a minimum, I think, there. Ubaldo is the only one with a better ERA at Coors Field than Jorge De La Rosa. So he's figured it out. You want to have that guy starting when you in front of your home fans. 50,000 people are going to be there, and you want to put together a good performance there. I get that. They're going to be on the road when they open up the 2015 season. But I think Brian Kilpatrick, or the guys on Purple Row, made a good point about this today, that what this kind of means is that Jolie Chacin may not be ready for action come opening day. And that's worrisome. That's worrisome because, you know, you would think that if he was healthy, he'd be the guy that they would go to for opening day because he's done it before. He's a guy that has been with the organization for forever, and he would be the one guy they would tab instead of a guy they signed in the offseason to was really a low-risk deal.
Kind of a throwaway deal. Yeah. I mean, a deal where you're providing rotation depth for the most part.
And Kyle Kendrick is an innings eater. That's fine. He throws a lot of innings. He doesn't throw a lot of great innings. So you have to wonder what the idea was there and the rationale behind it. Getting Kyle Kendrick to be like a fourth or fifth starter, which is what I thought he was going to be, that's not a bad move, but to start him the first game of the season, I don't see the reasoning there, especially over the guys that he could be starting over. Like, obviously, they wanted DLR to be the home opener, but even guys like Tyler Matzek, who was the best pitcher on the team last year, or Jordan Lyles, who had a decent season last year, to have Kyle Kendrick start because he's done it before. He's got a veteran presence. He can handle the pressure, I guess, because he's pitched in the postseason, pitched in Philadelphia, I guess. But it's a puzzling move.
It definitely does not inspire, like, you think, like, oh, man, the Dodgers go out behind Clayton Kershaw to open this season. The Giants will throw Madison Bumgarner. The Rockies will go with Kyle Kendrick.
Ace off. Colemanter, Kendrick, ace off.
Faces split down the middle on a web graphic. It's, you know, like you said, it doesn't really matter. It's one game. If he gives you 5 solid innings, you go to your bullpen, you're fine. Who cares? But, it kind of doesn't really excite the masses that much. We're getting close to first pitch time. We are, what are we at today? It's like a 22-minute podcast. We might call this like episode 35 and a half more accurately, but episode 36 is the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, which you can thank to my Google Maps route that took me on the most side street way through like Phoenix and then some other town and then Scottsdale.
Were you using MapQuest or something or Apple Maps?
I used Ask Jeeves.
I used
WebCrawler.
I used Excite.com on my Netscape browser.
Yeah, it did not didn't really give me the full fastest route.
Well, let's be there at 5:45, he said. I said, oh, that's a great idea. I got here at 5:46, so I was like, oh, I might be a little bit late, sorry. And
then you and CJ Nikowski just mocked me mercilessly on Twitter.
Yes. And
wah, wah.
And what time did you show up, Tyler?
I think about 5:48.
That's not true. It was
about 5:51.
It was 6:16, I think.
I think about 5:54.
You keep going up incrementally?
I think about 5:57.
Oh my God. I'm going to go find Dave Stewart and have him kick your ass.
He walked out here and gave us a very suspicious eye. Who are these two? What's that computer doing there?
Well, for the Diamondbacks, yeah. I don't want
true.
Any computers
that's
running
true.
My team.
That is true. This is probably the closest that a laptop has been to this office ever. The Arizona Diamondbacks, a team with, yeah, a lot of talent, but it doesn't feel like... I don't think you feel as threatened by the Diamondbacks as maybe you did in recent years. Even when they had the last administration,
yeah.
They talked the talk so much, Ruiz, we're going to get through with grit and scrap and talent, whatever. And now it kind of seems more like, well, wait, what did they do over the offseason? They signed Yasmani Tomas,
yeah.
Who doesn't really play a good third base, and they're hell-bent on having him play at third base. Yeah, this isn't a team that I think really strikes fear in you that much.
No, A.J. Pollock is going to have to cover left, center, and right field because he's got Mark Trumbo in left field and probably Yasmani Tomas in right. Those are two very, very subpar defenders in the outfield. Pollock is a great center fielder, but he can't cover everything. So, for the D-backs, it's going to be Paul Goldschmidt coming back, and he missed, 40 games, 50 games last year with a
right.
broken hand. He's a perennial MVP candidate every single year. He's awesome. But beyond that, the lineup doesn't impose anything at all. They traded away Miguel Montero this offseason, so the Rocky killer's finally gone. And unfortunately, since... Tomas can't play third base, that pushes David Peralta to the bench probably, because Peralta was a pretty good player last year. I think finished second in the NL Rookie of the Year balloting, second or third. And that means you're going with Jake Lamb probably at third base,
right.
who was a good bat but unproven. A lot of guys are looking at him this year as kind of to take up and step up and take that third base job. Then it's Chris Owings at short, Aaron Hill still there. You have the problems with catcher, Tuffy Gosewich, Peter O'Brien.
Right.
Like that's not inspiring at all.
It's not a lineup that really terrifies you.
And then you look at their rotation, and Cole Mentor, who's very good for somewhat of a limited skill set, I would guess. Last year was the first year that he wasn't just absolutely crushed second, third time through the order. But then they went out and got Jeremy Hellickson this offseason. You think, oh, that's not a bad call, but Hellickson gives up mega homers. He gave up 20-plus homers in pretty much every year of his career he's been healthy, which he was not last year. And now you're asking him to play in Arizona, probably the second most homer-friendly ballpark next to Coors Field.
Right.
He could give up 35 home runs this year. And they got Trevor Cahill as your three. And Chase Anderson, who was good last year, he's a 4 ERA guy, as Craig Goldstein would say. But, he's probably going to be in the rotation as well. But then you have guys like Daniel Hudson, the guys that got from the Red Sox in the offseason, Ruby De La Rosa, Alan Webster, who are unproven talents who haven't really been in a rotation for an extended period of time. And you have to wait till Patrick Corbin comes back. And Corbin, who missed all of last year, he could be back midseason. And that's pretty much what you're hoping for, because Corbin was fantastic in 2013. And you have to hope that you can last until then, basically, for the Diamondbacks.
They should presumably get Archie Bradley up at some point. Last year, he had some injury issues. We're also being eyeballed by some other dude who walked out of the Diamondbacks offices. They seem so confused by these technological contraptions that we're using. But Archie Bradley last year had the injury, came out of the major league level, was ineffective, and is going to get it figured out, you would think, based on his talent level. But you don't know that. I mean, injured last year and kind of had a bit of a tense moment with the organization where when they sent him to AAA out of spring training, his agent basically came out and said, you're doing it for service time things. You're holding him down to artificially reduce his service time so you can keep him under team control for longer. So,
and then he struggled and got hurt.
Right,
so.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so it seemed like it proved the organization
It backfired in pretty much every possible way it could have.
You would think that he would make an impact at some point this season, but I guess we'll see. John Gray, though, coming up against the Arizona Diamondbacks here in about 10 minutes or so.
Ben Badler of Baseball America.
Ben Badler of Baseball America will join us next week. He probably is. He's probably here. Everybody in the baseball world is here, which is very fun. I tweeted the other day, I want to go hike Camelback Mountain this week, because that's the one thing I know everyone in the baseball world does in Phoenix. So I assume I'll just run into anyone who has ever been part of the baseball media on Camelback. Also, maybe Tommy Lasorda singing weird hip-hop tunes.
Yeah, that was great. It was a great video.
Turned down for what?
Turned down for what?
He was just actually telling someone, turn it down. For what?
Yeah.
What? If you haven't seen that, go look it up on the internet and be terrified.
What's
for the rest
internet?
Of your days. You're saying that in the right place,
yeah,
am I right? Sorry, Arizona Diamondbacks. What is the Google machine? We're going to go hang out, watch a little baseball. Episode number 36 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, the Bobby J. Jones Memorial Edition. Anthony Masterson, I'm Tyler Mon. Thanks, pal. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
We'll talk to you guys next week with a little bit more in-depth take on our Salt River experience. And until then, bye.
If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the
Sweet.
Good.
Awesome. Sorry. No, you're fine. All right, dude. Thank you. You're gross. All right, 3, 2, 1.